over the last few days, just briefly, talking about them as the processes of body and mind that are our experience, that receive our experience and create our experience. Just offering this afternoon, I'd like to offer a reflection about, in particular, one of the aggregates, but to overview them all again briefly, as I did yesterday. But I'd mostly like to focus on the volitional formations aggregate, which is the aggregate that includes our emotions, our thoughts, our mind states, our views, agendas, beliefs. And this is the aggregate that is the active shaping of experience. And really, this is a place we've been looking at greed, aversion, and delusion, recognizing that those are the activities that create suffering in the mind. And greed, aversion, and delusion are mental formations. So that ability to observe, get familiar with our mental formations is a way to really begin to meet and learn with mental formations, to begin to see what they do, how they do it, how they affect, how they shape. Seeing this is very freeing. Partly because it shows the mind, that there's just a tumbling on of experience. And that understanding begins to undermine the identification with that tumbling on. It begins to undermine the craving and the clinging around that tumbling on. We see things as a tumbling on, and greed, aversion, and delusion have much less traction to engage. So the aggregates, the word aggregate, the Pali Khanda, translated as aggregate. Now the word itself means something like group or heap or collection, something like that. A group of things gathered together. So the Buddha pointed to these five groups, five heaps, five collections of things, collections of experience. And also, so that's one way to look at it, that they're collections of experience, but also that they are processes. Another way they are defined, the five aggregates being form, physical aspect of experience, feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. They are both understood as the experiences of those areas, the feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, the perception of a sight, seeing a bird and perceiving it, recognizing it as a bird. That's part of the recognition of these aggregates, but they're also the processes by which we know experience. So they're defined together. They're defined both as the process by which things happen and the result of that process. A feeling feels, perception perceives, perception recognizes, consciousness knows. So they're all understood as processes at work in our human system. And so seeing these processes as at work, we understand our human nature. We understand the nature of our humanness, not as an I or a me, kind of traveling inside this body, but just as a set of processes tumbling on. So a brief kind of review of the five aggregates. Most of you are familiar with them, so just a kind of reminder of each of the five. So the body form, all of the sensations, physical sensations, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, all of this is in the form aggregate. All of our physicality. And also we could say that the physicality in the world around us is also form, internal, external form. If I hit the bell, the vibration of that creates waves in the air. That's also form. Form affecting the ear. So whatever contacts our senses is form. The light striking our eye, sound contacting our ear, that's all form. Feeling, the experience of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Every experience has this feeling tone in every single moment of experience. There will be that sound of the bell. For some of you, it might have been pleasant. For some of you, unpleasant. For some of you, neutral. So that the feeling is a mental. This is where we move into the mental aggregate. This may be a little bit counterintuitive for the feeling tone associated with physical experience, because we might think of that as a physical thing. But the understanding, the Buddhist psychology understanding, is that the feeling tone associated with physical sensation, as well as with mental experience as well as physical experience, has feeling tone. So the arising of a mind state of love, there can be a pleasant quality to that. The arising of the mind state of anger, there can be an unpleasant quality to that. That also affects the arising of anger, also affects the body, and there's probably also unpleasant sensation associated with the body. But all feeling tone is understood to be mental. It's constructed in the mind. The feeling process is a mental process. And this, there's some depth to this understanding in that the feeling isn't inherent in the physical experience. The feeling is constructed based on past conditioning. Some of us like chili peppers. Some of us don't like chili peppers. Some of us find them pleasant. Some of us find them unpleasant. Some of that is conditioning. So the experience of feeling is shaped by prior conditioning. So feeling a mental process, a process in the mind. And the what feeling feels is pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Perception is the process of recognizing experience. Much of the time we think of recognition in terms of the objects in the world, the naming of experience. So looking around in your environment or feeling in your experience, you may see walls or windows or furniture, and the mind recognizes those things. And this is the process of perception. When we come out of the womb, we don't have names for these things. But as we grow, as we learn, as we are conditioned, we associate names with these things, and we begin to understand, categorize, associate certain kinds of experiences to a concept, to a perception. So we will recognize different, vastly different inputs into the eye as chair. Different things recognized as chair through learning, through the process of having seen a lot of chairs and getting to know what that idea basically is. The mind then creates this category. And when the process of perception works, when there's something that comes into our field of experience, our mind tries to recognize it. It's a very quick process. It's like whatever happens, our mind is going to try to figure it out. It's going to try to recognize it. It's going to try to put a category on it. It's a useful process. Really useful, helps us to navigate the world. It's like a shortcut so that we don't have to figure everything out every time we walk into a room. So the process of perception is kind of it's a way that by which we navigate our world. We know what we're dealing with. So we recognize experience. So the naming part is just one part of perception. There's also aspects of perception that deal with space, distance, location, that kind of thing. So the sense of how far you are from the nearest wall, that's perception. Knowing, the sense of knowing how when you need to stop as you're approaching a wall, or it's like, how fast can I run between here and there? Just like the sense of that is connected with perception. This process, very useful process for us to navigate our world. Then there's volitional formations, many mental activities that involve some kind of intention. This includes our emotional life. It includes thoughts. It includes a lot of minds. It includes mind states such as love, mindfulness, concentration. Those might not intuitively be understood or thought of as volitional. And the other piece of the volitional formations, they not only have this kind of intentional aspect to them, they also have a conditioning aspect to them. They tend to shape what follows. this aspect of volitional formation also includes views, agendas, things like that. And we'll talk much more about that. Now, this one thing I'll just say about this right now, though, that this intentional component to it, the sense of there be, it's like the intentional aspect of it is that these happenings, the volitional formation happenings in our experience, they are the agency of our human system. They choose, they decide, they intend, they act. So love, compassion arising will incline an action in a particular direction. Compassion inclines us to act to alleviate suffering. Anger inclines us to separate from experience. But this intention, this agency, this intention of action is not necessarily conscious intention. It's not necessarily that we are consciously choosing to do something. So that's something to understand about these intentional formations. They have an agency in and of themselves. They don't need us to act. They don't need to even be known or seen to act. And then consciousness is the simple process of knowing, just the bare contact with sense doors. Consciousness is described, described as being six kinds of consciousness, one for each of the six sense doors. There's seeing consciousness, smelling consciousness, tasting consciousness, touch consciousness, mind consciousness, sound consciousness. So there's a consciousness associated with each sense base. And the consciousness is just kind of the bare. Consciousness doesn't recognize what the experience is. That's perception. Consciousness is kind of like there's been an impact on a sense door. It's kind of like that. There's been a striking at the eye. Eye has been contacted by the sight, and consciousness knows that. Consciousness doesn't know that it's a bird. That's perception. Consciousness doesn't know that it's a pleasant sight or an unpleasant sight. That's feeling. Consciousness doesn't have any opinions about the sight. That's mental formation. So all of these processes work together in a moment. In a moment, our experience is an interweaving of these five processes. And that it happens very quickly, very quickly. They all come together. So there's a sight. We see, well, I'll switch, a sound. We hear a sound. There's the consciousness of that. It's contacting the form. It's contacting the body there. So the body, the form is involved there. The sound waves strike the eardrum, physically strike the eardrum, and there's contact and consciousness of hearing arises. And then the processes of perception and feeling happen. There's the feeling, kind of like there's that contact immediately leads to feeling, and there's a sense of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Perception comes right with that, and there's a recognition of what the sound is. If we recognize it, sometimes there's a lag there. It's a new sound. We don't recognize it. So the mind might linger with it a little bit. What is that? There's a recognition that we don't know. That's a kind of perception. I don't know that. What is that? We might go investigate. So then there's the recognition. Maybe we recognize it as leaf blower. Yesterday morning in the group, the leaf blower was right outside my door. There was that sound. There was the recognition of leaf blower. There's a little bit of tension. That's mental formation. A little bit of tension, realizing I should stop right now, turn the sound off, just wait for a few moments until the sound passed. So that was mental formation, decision about how to respond to the sound. It all happens very quickly. In every moment of experience, these five are coming together, responding to each other. That is what we experience. That is what mindfulness knows. That's what mindfulness is aware of. So volitional formation, a little more in there. We spend quite a bit of time getting to know volitional formation in our mindfulness practice. It's so much of what happens. And it is where our suffering happens. The reactivity, greed, aversion, and delusion as mental formations. That the sight itself, the perception itself, the feeling itself, the knowing itself, the suffering's not in there. It is in the mental formations that arise with that. When there's greed, aversion, and delusion in those mental formations, suffering will follow. And so the awareness of the familiarity of mental formations, getting to know mental formations, how they work, such an important part of our practice, because this is where suffering is constructed. And it's also where the wholesome qualities of mind, freedom, it is the wholesome qualities of mind happen. The movement towards freedom happens. The wisdom is a mental formation. Equanimity is a mental formation. Mindfulness is a mental formation. So we are cultivating certain mental formations in our practice in order to see certain other mental formations that create suffering. And to get to know those other mental formations that create suffering, how they work, what they do, to understand the suffering of those mental formations, how they create suffering. So it's useful to explore the states themselves, and you're all familiar with that, getting familiar with our reactivity, getting familiar with the frustration, the anger, the wanting, the confusion, the views, the ideas, the beliefs, all of that. That's a part of observing this aggregate. And yet the understanding of this aggregate as the conditioning, kind of the onward leading part of our experience, the agency in our experience, the part of our experience that chooses and decides, that acts. Knowing that, it's also useful not only to just touch into the experience of, okay, well, this is what fear feels like. You know, often we emphasize that, you know, get to know the feeling of fear, you know the body, how the body is with fear, know what the mind is like, the feeling of wanting to separate, all of that. That's really useful. And there's another aspect that's useful. And Sayadaw speaks of it as getting to know or getting familiar with the job description of the mental formation. What does it do? What is its job? This is looking at how that mental formation, how that particular arising shapes experience. What does it do? So anger, for instance. One thing I'll say about this, the suttas talk about, actually, in a way, they describe the job description of aggregates in a very general way. It describes the job of volitional formations, the job of this agency. And I'll read this section to you. I'll use Tanisaro Bhikkhu's translation of this. Tanisaro Bhikkhu translates volitional formations as fabrications. It's a nice word in a way, because these fabrications are both fabricated. They have arisen in dependence on conditions, and they fabricate. They tumble forward. They shape our experience. And so this is the description of what fabrications do. Somebody asks the Buddha, why do you call them fabrications? And the Buddha responds, because they fabricate fabricated things. They are called fabrications. What do they fabricate? They fabricate form as a fabricated thing. They fabricate feeling as a fabricated thing. They fabricate perception as a fabricated thing. They fabricate fabrications as a fabricated thing. And they fabricate consciousness as a fabricated thing. So the job description of fabrications is to fabricate, to construct the aggregates. And so the question of what's the job description of a specific aggregate, a specific mental formation, what's the job description of anger, for instance? We could look at, what the job description could be looked at in terms of how does it affect the aggregates? So how does anger shape the body? We feel perhaps pressure and heat in the body. It may even distort our face. The anger, when we are angry, sometimes our face gets contorted. There's often tension in the body. So the arising of anger fabricates or shapes the experience of the body, of form. It affects our feeling tone. Often in the direction of feeling unpleasantness. Although I found it very interesting at one point, just as a little bit of an aside, but I was observing anger a lot on one particular retreat and feeling the suffering of it a lot. And there was a lot of curiosity. Why on earth does this keep happening? There's so much suffering around it, and the suffering is seen. What's going on there? What's the hook? And just watching over and over again, being aware of the arising of anger, the mind at one point saw just the very beginning, just the very initial moments of anger starting. And what I normally had experienced as the anger as like a lot of pressure and heat, you know, it's like just this explosion and this pressure and this need to do and all of that. The very beginning of anger, just as it was arising, was like aliveness and warmth. There was a sense of energy rising and a sense of kind of like capability and, you know, the sense of agency. All of that felt pleasant. It was shocking. It was almost immediately, like quickly went to unpleasant, quickly went beyond that. But the recognition, you know, it's like, wow, that's some of the hook of anger. It feels good, that energizing feeling, that sense of I've got control, I've got power, all of that felt good. So there was a pleasantness there in the very beginning. So, you know, not to have any ideas about, you know, so anger tends to make experience unpleasant, or we tend to perceive things as unpleasant. Yes, and there can be pleasantness in there too. So just notice, just be curious. What is the shaping power of this mental formation? How does it affect body? How does it affect feeling? How does it affect perception? Anger can shape our perception in many ways. It can shape our perception as, you know, it might be that it's shaping our perception to feel like we're being attacked by someone, or that we have to lash out and do something, you know, that so that the perception might be that there's danger. Or the perception might be a judgment around, you know, that this is bad or wrong or something like that. There can be that, you know, the perception shape. It can shape our perception when anger arises. Many of you have noticed, I'm sure, that when there's anger, you know, when there's some kind of mental activity like that going on, it can spill over into other things, and we turn and look at something else and find something to dislike about that. We perceive that as something wrong in our environment as well. So anger shapes perception. Anger tends to shape more anger. When we engage with anger, it tends to condition that. It's like it gets easier to be. No. What we receive. I mentioned this kind of the other day, that what we believe, when I was talking about delusion, what we think, what our views are, those views, we tend to receive information that confirms those views and don't receive information that doesn't confirm those views. And this is kind of this filter of whatever it is, and in this case, talking about anger, the filter of anger will tend to recognize things or see things or take things in that confirm that the view that anger is holding, and not potentially take in information that view is not aligned with. So the job description of anger has all of these pieces to it. It shapes the rest of our experience. The job description of any experiences, you know, we could take the job description of an agenda. An agenda, I have this, some work done in my yard and some new plants out there, and there's some weeds growing in among some of the plants, and I'm starting to be able to identify those weeds quickly. But when I first go out there, it's kind of like, oh, I don't see any. And then I'll see one, and then I'll see another one, and then it's like, oh, there's so many here, and then I can pull them up. So the agenda to see that, to do that activity of finding those weeds, the mind then kind of begins to see that. You know, when I first walk out there, it's not seeing that so much. So the agenda can shape the recognition of that thing. So that's a kind of an innocent kind of thing in a way. And again, it's a useful process that happens. Those agendas can have us not see something else. I don't know what I'm not seeing when I'm seeing the weeds. There may be something. And then there's kind of the basic kind of job description of our mental formations, like the function of our mental formations. That's a piece that Sayadaw points to. Like the function of aversion, I mentioned this, the function of aversion really is to separate us. It believes that separation is going to make us happy. And it orients to finding things to separate from. Greed kind of does the opposite. Greed wants to connect with things. It thinks it has the view that connection is going to bring happiness, and it orients us to finding things to connect with. Finding things to attach to, perhaps I should say, attach to. The job description of love, this is why I changed the word, you know, to me the job description of love is about care and connection, wholesome connection. There's the sense of caretaking. Compassion has the sense of wanting to alleviate suffering. That's its job description. The action there is to alleviate suffering. Job description of love, really to connect. Honor, respect, all of those kinds of qualities. A job description of wisdom, we could say, is to understand suffering and to free the mind from suffering. So there's every mental formation, there's every mental formation has this, or volitional formation has this shaping quality to it. And so that exploration of how does this volitional formation shape experience? We get to know which volitional formations lead in the direction of suffering and which volitional formations lead more towards ease and peace and happiness. This is onward leading as well. That understanding, that knowledge that comes with that observation of what these volitional formations do. Our volitional formations condition experience, so they are the conditioners of experience, but they are also conditioned. Our volitional formations have arisen based on prior volitional formations. Back kind of ad infinitum. So what's arising now is arising based on prior volitional formations forming and conditioning these volitional formations. None of this needs an I or me or mine to happen. For myself, just the recognition, just the understanding, what's arising is conditioned. That itself is very freeing. I don't have to know all the details of the conditioning. I don't have to know all the pieces, how they came together. Sometimes we have that idea or agenda with looking at our experience, especially our volitional formations. We might certainly had this with anger a lot and self-hatred. You know, I have got to understand the roots of this. You know, that's where and how I'll be free from it. Understanding what's underneath is what will free me from this arising. So there was almost the sense of, and at one point I saw with self-hatred just how vastly, deeply conditioned it was. How so many different ways in my history that pattern had been conditioned. And there was a little bit of a, and the thought that arose in the mind was, wow, this is so vast. This pattern is so vast. To understand all of that conditioning. So it's kind of like the mind saw that it had been conditioned in so many different ways in so many different places that it understood the vastness of the conditioning. And the mind thought it had to go back and kind of understand all of those individual kinds of things in order to be free from the self-hatred. And the mind said, this is like a huge project. this is not gonna be free of this until I'm fully enlightened. You know, this is gonna take full awakening. So the idea that the mind had to see the entirety of the complexity of the pattern. And yet the other day, what I said, you know, I pointed out to a thing that the mind saw in a moment around self-hatred. It's like, oh, what's happening is this is happening in this moment. It's conditioned based on all of those things from the past. But all that's arising now is a thought. And the mind has jumped on that thought and has started believing it. That is happening now. It's not, the freedom from that can happen now with the releasing of that belief. And it did happen then with the releasing of that belief. There's no need to undo all of those other things. Just this moment's arising and seeing the conditioning in this moment. And yet even that may not be how freedom happens. Freedom with a particular kind of flavor of a mental formation. So we could have this idea of like needing to dive underneath, needing to find all of the threads that lead to this pattern. And really just simply meeting what is here already, that is enough. That is the information that's available in the present moment is enough that freedom can happen in this moment. So in the group yesterday, I think it was, we were talking about looking at habits and patterns from a different perspective, and you know, kind of the idea that in investigation, looking at a particular mind state, that we need to kind of look at it in a particular way, figure things out, that we need to be in charge of the investigation, that we need to do that investigation. And kind of have it's like the investigation we think of is like putting together the pieces of the puzzle of how that creates suffering or how that is a suffering in our experience. And I've certainly had that kind of understanding happen in my experience where there's a real seeing of like, oh, this thought has arisen and it's connected to all of this history. And there's an understanding of how the history is coming into this moment and how the mind is reacting to it. I've seen that, and it is incredibly freeing to see that. And it can happen in just the seeing in this moment, being available in this moment. The continuity of mindfulness can reveal that kind of detail of how a mental formation comes to be and what it's doing in the mind and how it's intending, how it's planning to shape suffering. Anger, you know, arising in the mind, the intention. Yeah, I'm gonna do this. And it doesn't think about suffering. It's just doing its thing. But seeing that in the moment, the continuity of mindfulness, seeing how that conditioning is unfolding, very freeing. The mind can just let it go when it sees that way lies suffering. It can just let it go. Like my mind let go of the suffering when it understood this is just a belief going on. Seeing that was very freeing. And I said in the group that we also don't have to see that picture. We don't have to see all of that detail for freedom to follow. Sometimes we can have, things can fall away, reactivity can fall away. And what we recognize is that it's not coming up anymore. We don't ever see it go away. We don't see the wisdom that led to that disappearance. So an example of this from my own practice, this is probably the main one where this really kind of sunk in for me, that, wow, I don't have to like hold on to something and investigate it in order to have wisdom develop, in order for the freedom to happen. So it was anger. I have a lot of anger stories. And I was noticing quite a bit that at that particular time, it was a particular anger with a particular person. And at that time, when that person came into my mind, the anger would just run rampant. And trying to be mindful of it, I would just get pulled into the rabbit hole. So that, you know, trying to be, to investigate, trying to be with the anger there was not so helpful. Well, this is, you know, that learning that we do. We recognize when we have that capacity to be with and when we don't. And this was a period of time, a stretch of time where every time that anger came up, when I tried to be with it, it would just go right into it, right into that rabbit hole. And so my approach at that point was to set it aside. I would acknowledge, yep, I see you, anger. So there was enough awareness to see that anger was arising and enough awareness to see that way there's a strong pull there. That's going to take me into the anger. And so there was a kind of a respectful bowing to the anger. I see you. I'll pay attention to you when my mindfulness gets stronger. But right now, I'm going to take a walk and I'm going to put my attention on my feet. And you're welcome to come with me. But I'm not going to pay attention to you right now. And so it was a very gentle redirect of the attention. It was not a repression of the anger. It was not a denial of the anger. It was not averse to the anger. It was just, it was a clear, wisdom was recognizing this is not what I can be with right now. So the mind went to the feet. Wisdom helped me go to pay attention to the feet and just do walking. And I did that practice for months with that particular pattern. And I noticed over time that the surges of that particular pattern of anger, at some point I began noticing, wow, it's not happening as much, not happening as frequently. And then I don't even know how long it was, but I do remember very clearly one day, the thought of the person arising in my mind that I was angry with, that thought arising in my mind. And that's kind of like, that had started to wake me up when that person arose in my mind, because it so quickly led to anger. But, you know, so there was the thought, and it's like, wow, there's that thought. And wow, I don't remember having felt that anger in a really long time. And even with that person in the mind, there was no interest at all, nothing that was shaping anger at all, heading in the direction of anger. It was so thoroughly gone in that moment. It was startling. I never saw it go away. I never saw the wisdom that helped to free the mind from that. I never investigated it and understood what it was connected to. I mean, I knew what it was connected to in a way. I mean, I knew that I was angry, who I was angry with, what I was angry about. But I didn't like see how it was connected to history and all of that, you know, all of these patterns. I mean, intuitively, I could say that, you know, the anger was connected to something that probably happened in relationship to something in my childhood or something. But, you know, I didn't see any of that. I didn't see any of that kind of conditionality. I didn't even see when it went away. It just stopped arising. And there was the recognition at some point, it's gone. That was a moment of wisdom there. That was a moment of, and in retrospect, I guess I could say that maybe the wisdom that freed the mind from it was understanding that it was suffering. You know, that's about all I can say about it in terms of the wisdom that developed there. So that experience was so helpful for me to recognize the mode of feeling like I had to dive in and pull it apart, figure it out. You know, sometimes wisdom, and Sayadaw says this sometimes, wisdom can develop in the background. And that's kind of what felt like happened there. It grew in the background somehow. I didn't see it growing. There was a very gradual development of that wisdom, and I just noticed at some point that pattern isn't there anymore. So I say that because there can be this tendency with mental formations and the encouragement to get to know the job description of mental formations, see how it's conditioning. There can be a little bit of a tendency to dive in, try to pull it apart and figure it out. It's useful to understand that these experiences are conditioned, not only that the mental formations are conditioned, but that they condition all of our experience. Really useful to know that. And the more we see the nature of conditioning, it feels almost to me like the more I understand at a deep level the nature of the mind as conditioned, the less I need to see the details of it. It's just, oh yeah, that's conditioned. And the mind just, yeah. It just creates that understanding creates the conditions for the mind to just be able to watch it, and often to release the habit or pattern. Just like, oh yeah, that the mind is making this up, as somebody said in the group today. The mind is making this up. That's what's going on. So there's this interesting, and I mentioned this the other day, this interesting kind of paradox in a way of the complexity of the way our minds do what they do. And the simplicity of the practice that lets the mind see that. The simpler the mind, the simpler the practice, the more that it sees, the more that it understands, maybe even, because I think sometimes when we see that kind of detail, when we see how a mental formation is conditioning something, how the conditioning is unfolding, it's so interesting and it's so freeing when we see that clearly, that we get the idea. So here's another mental formation. We get the idea that that is how freedom will happen and the only way that freedom will happen. And so we think we have to dive in. We have to see all that detail. And there are different ways that freedom can happen. The last piece I'll drop in about mental formations, I meant to bring this in earlier. Maybe I even said it, I don't remember now at this point. But another mental formation, another one of these conditioning factors of mind is identification. The sense of self is a mental formation. And so we identify with other mental formations. Often we identify with body. The teachings around the five aggregates say there tends to be identification with any of these five aggregates. We identify with body, we identify with feeling, we identify with perception. But that identification is just another mental formation. It is a mental formation. And so it also can just be seen, observed. We can be curious about the job description of that sense of self and curious about what it is doing. You know, the feeling I think the sense of when it feels like I'm making a choice, I'm doing this, it's that sense of self is making a choice. So the sense of self as a mental formation chooses, decides, acts. And so it does feel like I'm doing that when we are aware of a sense of self engaging. And so I did this, I can do this, I want to do that. All of that is the kind of the collecting around, the identification around intention and choice. And then that mental formation that feels like me makes that choice. It's no different than anger making a choice or wisdom making a choice. But sometimes it can feel different in a way. But sometimes we attribute a sense of self after something happens. You know, it's like we watch, we see that we've done something. It's like, well, I did that. But it was, you know, delusion or greed making that choice. It wasn't a conscious decision. But there are times when it feels like a conscious decision, and that's a sense of self. It was a sense of self that's coming in, choosing, deciding. So knowing that, understanding that, you know, when it feels like you have a choice, make a skillful one. Because it does feel like we have a choice sometimes. And it's just another mental formation. That sense of self. Just, okay, that too. That's just an arising. That's just a particular feeling that feels so familiar. So it's time to stop. May our practice together be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May whatever wisdom and understanding comes with our practice be shared and offered to support the happiness and liberation of all beings. And remembering that that all beings includes ourselves. May our wisdom also serve, benefit our own liberation. See you next time.